The following is an exclusive sports presentation of Extra Sports 1300.
Next, I'd like to introduce...
Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
Southern Colorado, it's time for your live and local sports talk show.
That boy is good.
Good and terrible.
Drive Time Sports, presented by Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery, your sports action hub with over 54 TVs so you don't miss out on the action, located at Woodman and I-25. The only place to hear talk about your teams.
I think you two dudes are going to become real homies.
Where do we find these guys?
Oh man, I hate those guys.
Here are your hosts, Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden, with the godfather of Colorado Springs Sports Radio, Wheels.
Good Tuesday to you. Welcome to the program. Ryan and Wheels with you in studio. Got a lot to cover. NBA Finals, Broncos mini camp. But today we want to start with the MLB draft, as the Rockies have been making quite a few picks over the last day and a half. And right now we are joined by one of them. He was taken in the third round earlier today. He went 9-3 with a 1.89 ERA this season for Furman, which helped him earn all Southern Conference first team honors from both the coaches and the media. He is the reigning SoCon Pitcher of the Year from 2016, and now he is one of the newest members of the Rockies organization. Will Gaddis joins me on the show. Will, congrats. Looks like you get to keep purple in your uniform.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. So describe to us what the last few hours have been like for you.
Oh, they've been surreal. Just being here in Nashville, Tennessee at my home with my family, my girlfriend, my grandma, they're all here. So just having my name called was just a dream come true.
Mm. And do you get a phone call from the Rockies? How does that work?
I got a phone call from my agent about three or four picks before, and he basically said, hey, Colorado's going to take you with the 86th pick. And then after seeing it happen on TV, I got a call from Jordan Zarnicki, the area scout, and then he basically just told me that they selected me, and then he'll give me a follow-up call later on just to go over some details about what I need to be doing the next couple days.
And what was that initial feeling like? Because I imagine hearing from the agent, you have one feeling, and then actually hearing from the Rockies is another.
Right. I think the first time my agent told me, I was like, okay, like it didn't really hit me, but just sitting in my living room watching it on TV, it just kind of basically hit me all of a sudden, and it's just a dream come true.
You mentioned that you're surrounded by a lot of family and friends. Who was the first phone call that you made?
I made it to my brother, who's actually in Army training in Texas right now. He's actually stationed in Fort Carson in Colorado. So he's been a huge supporter. I mean, my whole family's been huge supporters, but I called him. He was the first one. But he's just always been there for me, so I'm sure he was very happy.
It's got to make the sting of the Predators losing the other night feel a little bit better now.
Yeah, it does. I mean, Nashville hasn't really been a hockey town lately, but this whole week with Country Music Festival and the Stanley Cup Finals, it's been a busy week, and now the MLB draft, but it's definitely been worth it.
Yeah, did you happen to make the drive from Brentwood to Nashville the other night?
I did. I only live about 15, 20 minutes south of Nashville. Mm. So, I mean, it's pretty easy commute.
And what was that atmosphere like? We saw Luke Bryan performing on a roof somewhere. How was that?
We were downtown, just walking in the streets, just waiting for the Predators game. And, I mean, there were probably 50, 60,000 people there, so it was just a great atmosphere to be in.
Yeah, nothing comparing to the excitement of today, I'm sure. Will Gaddis, former pitcher for Furman University, now a Rockies draft pick, joining us here on Drive Time Sports. I'm sure that you are on the Rockies' radar coming into the season based on what you did in 2016 as the SoCon Pitcher of the Year, but you go 6-0 down the stretch in your last six starts and help Furman to the best record over that over the last, what, 30 games or something? You had just right. some ridiculous run that you guys had out there in Furman, and you were front and center. What was the last month or so of the season like for you?
Yeah, I mean, we hit a rough stretch in the middle of our season. I mean, we weren't pitching well. We weren't hitting well. It was just a combination of things. But we really pulled it together towards the end. I think we tied the wins record in history for our school, which was great under our first-year head coach, Brett Harker. But just being able to go out there and pitch and then hopefully carry momentum into the next game, save bullpen's arms and everything, has just led us to a lot of success down the road.
Yeah, in a little bit of history that you helped make there, and then you make history now because you are the highest draft pick in Furman University history. When you hear that, what does it make you feel?
I mean, honestly, I don't think it's really settled in yet, but personally, I hope it's motivational for everyone else. I think the group of guys, my teammates that we have at Furman now, is the best group of guys that I've ever played with, and I hope they use this as motivation, and hopefully we see some more Furman University names start popping up on the draft boards in the future.
Can you explain to me what a paladin is?
It is a, I think it's an old knight. You know, I've been asked that question numerous times, and quite frankly, I don't really know how to describe it, but almost like a medieval knight, I would say.
Very cool. So I know that you had gone through the draft process once before. You were taken in the mid-30 rounds, I believe, by the Yankees, if
right.
my memory serves. But I would imagine that it's a very different level of interest or level of contact that you have with Major League Scouts coming out of high school and as opposed to now. So at what point did you realize that teams are really interested in me, not just like they'll draft me, but like take me high in the draft? When did you start noticing that?
Right. I think almost probably after my sophomore year. So after last year, I went to go play in the Cape Cod Summer League up in Massachusetts. And then, I mean, the Cape has always been a dream for me. I didn't think I could achieve it or anything, but being able to go up there and play and have success up there kind of made it all become a reality, and I mean, I guess it's where led me to where I am today.
Yeah, and we always hear of you top college players going out to the Cape Cod League. Other than the level of competition, explain to those of us who don't travel to the East Coast what that's like to just to be around the best of the best when it comes to college baseball.
It's awesome. I mean, I loved every minute of it. I think one of the best things that came out of it was just building friendships with my teammates, basically picking their brains, you know, figuring out what they throw, how they throw at different grips, what they would do in this situation, just kind of learning from them. One of my old coaches used to say, be a sponge, always learn something new, whether you're not playing or in the middle of a game, make an adjustment or something. And that's one thing that I've carried with me into my junior year at Furman.
Other than a sponge-like mind, what kind of a pitcher are the Rockies getting?
They're getting a bulldog, a competitor, a strike thrower. I've been asked that many times, and I tell people I won't stop until I'm the best. I mean, everyone always talks about getting to the major leagues and having success, but I think a lot of guys aren't willing to put the work in to get them there. I think they're basically relying on their talent. And I'm just going to keep working hard, and I'm excited to get going.
And we're excited to have you out here in Colorado, or at least part of the Rockies organization. We hope to see you in Colorado very soon. You can follow Will on Twitter at W_GAD25. Congrats again, Will. Really appreciate you taking time. I know today's got to be just one of the most hectic days of your life, so we certainly appreciate you carving out some time for us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Our pleasure. Will Gaddis, Furman University, a third-round pick of the Colorado Rockies in the second day of the Major League Baseball draft. Highest draft pick in Furman University history. Last night, right here on Extra Sports 1300, you heard the Golden State Warriors win their second NBA title in 3 years. And with that, so many questions today about legacies, dynasties, the future of the NBA, and no one better to talk about all of that with than David Ramsey from the Gazette, who wrote about Kevin Durant this morning. David, good to talk to you. How are you?
Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Just interviewing a bunch of Rockies draft picks, which is kind of neat. So let's start with the question about the Warriors as a whole. 2 out of 3, is that a dynasty?
Well, I describe it as a minor dynasty. and it's, the Warriors have a great chance to be much more than that. The Warriors were the best team in basketball a year ago. But that battle, that basketball war with the Thunder just wore them down. To go back in time, you remember the Louisville beat, not Louisville, I'm sorry, North Carolina State beat that great, great Houston team, the great Phi Slamma Jamma team in 1983. Why'd that happen? Because Houston had to play Louisville in the semis. They were beat down. They were tired. Same thing last year. That was an incredible finals, but the superior team lost. The Cavs were courageous and magnificent, but they weren't the best team. So, the Warriors have been the best team in the NBA for 3 years. That's a minor dynasty, which seems on its way to becoming much more than that. The end is not in sight for this Warriors team.
You and I discussed this about the Warriors' viability as the greatest team ever, or where they would rank among the greatest teams ever. And I am partial to the Warriors. It seemed like last week you're partial to the Showtime Lakers. But do you think that there is a number in your head where if the Warriors win next year, they could be considered the greatest team ever? If they have to win two more, is there any way that the Warriors, in your mind, can be considered the greatest team in the history of basketball?
Well, I think what you have to do, Ryan, and I've been thinking about this a lot. I think you have to go with a couple things, like the pre-3-point era and the post-3-point era.
Mm.
And I wouldn't, the post-3-point era didn't start as soon as the shot was introduced, right? Because the game has changed so much. I watched that ESPN 30 for 30 Bad Boys documentary over the weekend. Okay, so let's say the Warriors played the Pistons, those great Pistons teams. They had to get on the time travel bus. These Warriors, mm-hmm. Well, it would not go well if those Warriors got on a time travel bus and had to go back to 89 and play the Pistons. I think that the Pistons team might literally devour Stephen Curry, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if the Pistons had to get on the time travel bus and come to now and play these Warriors with current refs and then the current climate where hard fouls lead to punishment and ejection and suspension, it would be a different situation. So this Warriors team seems highly likely to become the greatest team of the three-point era. It's hard to compare eras. And Ryan, as you can tell, I'm really into basketball history. I mean, that's my thing. That's where my nerdiness comes out. I mean, I could talk to you for an hour, I could talk to you for an hour and a half or 2 hours about NBA basketball in the 50s. I've listened to basketball fans dismiss the past so much. It was a different game. The game evolves. The game changes. So, you know, this Warriors team in the three-point era, yes, is dominant. But if you go back to some of those different eras when play was much more physical and violent, I'm not so sure how they do. I don't like their chances if you go back to if they would go back to the violent era and have to compete under those conditions.
David Ramsey, sports columnist for the Gazette, joining us here on Drive Time Sports. I think something that really hasn't been brought up, I mean, we talk about the trilogy. I think something that we can discuss and that can move between eras is rivalry. So Cavs-Warriors, as the Celtics-Lakers two-part 30 for 30 gets ready to air tonight, Warriors and Cavs, could we put it up among the greatest basketball rivalries?
Well, basketball history shook in Game 3 of this series, right? If the Cavs played a great 45 minutes and then just collapsed in the last three. Korver's shot didn't drop. I don't fault LeBron James for passing Korver the ball at the end of that game. And Kyrie Irving dribbles the clock down low and takes what I thought was a very silly three-pointer. But the Cavs win that game. This series is going seven. And who knows what happened in Game 7. But we would have had two straight seven-game series. It's not up there with the Lakers Celtics yet, because it would need to happen another one or two times, but there's been some great basketball theater. Going back to Game 3, that was one of the best games I've seen. And I'm an old guy. I've been watching the NBA Finals since 1969, right? And I just love it that they actually show the games live now, Ryan. It hasn't been that long ago that you had to watch some of the games in the finals on tape delay. But again, this rivalry has a chance to be right up there with any of the rivalries. I would call it the LeBron versus Curry rivalry. Two vastly different players. Teams that are quite a bit different. That's what brings in people. That's why people love the Magic and Bird battles. Two different guys, two different games, and leading two very different teams. That's what got people so excited. That's what helped revive the NBA. Ryan, I'll tell you, I would like to see a different finals next year, and I'd like to see a different finals the year after that. I would be in favor of seeing four different teams in the next two finals. That would be nice. Now, that's not what I expect, and I'm sure that's not what you expect either.
No, certainly not. Not as long as the subject of your latest prose, Kevin Durant, stays with the Golden State Warriors. You chose today to write about what his legacy means. Obviously, he gets a ring on his finger for the first time, and that's a game changer for many people's legacies and the way that Kevin Durant will be viewed. How has your perception of Kevin Durant changed within the last 12 hours?
Well, he came up really, really big when it mattered most, and you can't take that away from him. I mean, I can't take that away from him. But, and then I wrote about this today, what if Kevin Durant had stayed in Oklahoma City and, along with Russell Westbrook, had taken down the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals this year and then gone on to beat LeBron? Now, that's a legacy. That's some serious accomplishment. Heading off to the best team in basketball, joining up with that best team in basketball and winning a title. Again, I can't criticize Durant's performance in the finals. He was amazing. I can wish he had not gone off and joined the best team in basketball. I mean, would you think a lot more of Kawhi Leonard if he signed with the Warriors and won the title next year, right? Is that where we're headed? And listen, Kevin Durant did what was best for him. So I get it. You know, that's what you do, Ryan. You do what's best for you and your family. That's what I do. I do what's best for me and my family. I get it. But I don't have to like it. And I don't have to admire it. And I don't. I mean, I don't admire the decision. I have to admire the accomplishment because he was the best player in that series, even better than LeBron. But I still do not support, admire, or like his decision to join the best team in basketball. That's the easy way out. I would have liked to have seen him take the tough road with the Thunder, with the team he had grown up with, with the players he had grown up with a city and a state and a region who loved him, and I think in their heart of hearts still love him in a way. That's what I would have liked to have seen, and that's what I believe he could have done. I think he proved that in this finals that he could have taken the Thunder to a title too, and that would have been vastly more impressive in my book.
I couldn't agree with you more. The thing that I find interesting, though, I don't know that many people would agree with you that he would have ever been able to get the Thunder over the top against the Warriors. So the question I was going to ask is, let's look at the downside of that. He stays with Oklahoma City, and he becomes basketball's version of Dan Marino. And now we're looking at, because I'm thinking about the quarterbacks, and you have Manning and Brady, who have already surpassed Dan Marino in many people's eyes. Then you have Elway and Montana, who are probably already above him. And then you look at Drew Brees, and you look at Aaron Rodgers, and there's a chance that when we talk about the handful of greatest quarterbacks ever, Dan Marino may not even come up. So if he didn't make this move, could there be a chance that we don't even look at Kevin Durant? Because we saw this finals, that Kevin Durant is one of the best players on the planet, period. Just like Dan Marino was one of the best quarterbacks on the planet when he played. But if you don't win, you never get looked at in that way.
Well, in the moment when I woke up totally to Kevin Durant's greatness was last year's Western Conference Finals. The Thunder were up 3-1, right? The Thunder were up 3-1 and had some really good chances to win that thing in six. They came close to winning that series in six games. That's when I awoke to, wow, Kevin Durant is really, really good. Kevin Durant is better than Curry. And I think Curry's, you know, superb, obviously. It was not some far-fetched, you know, impossible dream for him to believe he could win this whole thing with the Thunder. It would have been a tougher road. And who knows all the factors that went into it. You know, maybe he didn't want to play with Russell Westbrook, who's kind of, you know, the raging fighter of the NBA. You know, maybe he didn't want to play with Westbrook anymore. But it was not some wild, far-fetched dream. They were up 3-1 and had chances to win it in six. I mean, game six was in Oklahoma City. So I believe that if they had won, and you know, it's I find it fun to talk about ifs. If they had beaten the Warriors in six, they would have gone off and beaten them. You know, I think they would have gone off and beaten the Cavs. Again, he did what was best for him. He did not do what was best for the NBA. He did not do what was best for hardcore NBA fans like you and I. I mean, this was not the most exciting playoffs, and you know, nobody's going to argue with that. And he jumped on a trend that's not good for the league and not good for us, for you and I, for others who really, really enjoy watching NBA games. I don't like foregone conclusions, right? I'm not happy about the somewhat foregone conclusion that these guys are going to meet again next year. I like some mystery about my upcoming basketball seasons. I'd like to get that mystery back.
Well, I don't know. Tim Connolly said today that there are agents calling him saying free agents want to play with Nikola Jokic. So you never know.
Yeah, you know, I just look forward to when Nurkic is a free agent and wants to come back, right? But no, there's a reason to be optimistic, you know, for us long-suffering Nuggets observers. But you know, Jokic is just one piece, and I'm not so sure that you're going to win an NBA title with him as your best player, as good as he is. But you know, is Jokic the piece for a title team? Without being, and I'm a Jokic believer, but I'm not convinced of that he's the piece. He is the number one piece. I think they've got to find a Jokic sidekick who's probably better than Jokic for them to start talking about a title.
Maybe it was LeBron's agent that called Tim Connolly.
Well, you know, who knows? The other thing too is you talk about the improbable quest. It's for the, you know, what I would like to see, Ryan, in my life, is I would like to see the Nuggets play in the NBA Finals. That would make me happy. That would bring me joy. As you know, I've been going to Nuggets games since before they were in the Nuggets. They used to be called the Rockets. I just like to see them play in the NBA Finals.
David, I'll let you get back to watching the Jeff Sessions testimony, and we always appreciate your time.
I just love that guy's accent, Ryan, let me tell you.
Thanks, David.
Okay, talk soon.
Yep. There's David Ramsey, Gazette sports columnist, joining us here on Drive Time Sports. Welcome back, Drive Time Sports, here on Extra Sports 1300. Ryan Kaufman with you. And last night, the Rockies made a pair of selections in the first two rounds of the MLB draft. The second of those two is my next guest. He made 61 appearances for the University of Virginia in 3 years at the school, recording 17 saves, sixth most in school history. This year, he was 3-1 with a 1.7 ERA and 14 saves, which was second most in the ACC and ninth in the nation. Tommy Doyle joins me now. Tommy, first of all, congratulations, but also thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It means a lot.
Do you feel any different when you wake up this morning?
Not really. I mean, it was kind of – last night was just like a crazy sort of events that happened, and then went to bed and woke up this morning. I guess it really hasn't hit me yet. So,
What was the setup for the draft? Were you with a lot of family and friends? Where were you?
Yeah, so I was at my house. It was me and my parents and a couple of friends. My family members are all off over the U.S. doing working jobs, so they couldn't make it. So,
when that call came in from the Rockies, what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty surreal. I mean, it's a very humbling experience getting picked by any team in the MLB draft, especially by the Rockies. And it was just a pretty surreal moment that I'll probably never forget.
And it was a big night for UVA. Of course, Pavin Smith and Adam Hazley go back-to-back within the top 10. You get drafted later on in the evening. I know more of your teammates are getting drafted as this thing continues. How much did you speak with your teammates last night and into today?
Yeah, so I tried to reach out to them, but I bet their phones exploded. But, I mean, I told them before it happened. I said, whatever happens, guys, like, love you. It's been a good 3 years. We'll see what happens. You have all my support and stuff like that. But, I mean, like, it couldn't have gone to two better guys. I'm so proud of them. So it was really cool to see them go that high.
You come from a pretty athletic family, Tommy. Your brother played ball at Harvard. Your sisters play lacrosse at Bucknell. How competitive is the Doyle family when it comes to sports?
Yeah, I'd say it's just as competitive with sports as academics. I mean, all of us went to very prestigious academic schools, so that was awesome that we got to do both. But, I mean, sports has always been a part of our lives as well, so it's just fun to see how everyone sort of laid out their lives with how they're able to go to school and play sports as well. Then after that, continue on their careers, whether it was with baseball with my brother or stuff like that. So it was really cool.
The newest member of the Rockies organization, Tommy Doyle, joining us here on Drive Time Sports. This was not the first time you have been drafted. The Nationals took you in the 35th round while you were in high school. Was professional baseball ever a serious consideration, or were you sure that you wanted to go pitch for the Cavaliers?
So my senior year, about midway through the season, I told the scouts that I was firm with my commitment to UVA. Mm-hmm. And so when they drafted me, it was out of courtesy, and I appreciated it. It was awesome. But they knew that I was going to go to school. They just wanted to reach out and let me know that they had drafted me, and that's what they thought of me. So it was really cool.
If you went straight to the professional ranks, you never would have experienced what you did in 2015. How much did things change in Charlottesville after you guys won the College World Series?
I mean, it's something that it's something I'll never forget. I mean, the absolute support from the fan base, from the city of Charlottesville, it was crazy. I mean, just going to Omaha is a crazy, crazy experience as well. But then winning it all, it's just something I never really dreamed of. And I'm real glad that I was part of that that team that year.
Most pitchers think of themselves as starters. They don't really think about being a reliever. You kind of fit both roles your first year and a half in Virginia. When you were permanently moved to the bullpen, how difficult was that?
Yeah, so about midway through the season last year, my coaches approached me, and they talked about the idea of switching because I had a couple bad outings, and it just seemed like change needed to happen. So I was 100% for it. Any way that I could help the team was good enough for me, whether that was starting or closing. And the first game that I closed, we beat, I think it was BC or something, and it kind of just took off from there, and I kind of embraced the role. And it was a cool transition to see going from starting to closing. You kind of learn the ins and outs of both, so I'm glad I got to experience that.
How does your mindset change when you become a closer as opposed to a starter?
Yeah, definitely I think there's a different mindset when it comes to the both. Mine was kind of a trial and error sort of thing. I got to watch a couple guys in my previous years close, like Josh Boers, and then I watched Nick Howard do it the year before. So, I mean, those are two top-tier pitchers I got to watch and kind of observe. So I'm really glad that I got to have that background.
Under Jeff Breidich, the Rockies have prioritized power pitchers, guys that can touch in the high 90s with their fastball, get people out with their fastball. How much do you fit that mold?
Yeah, I mean, I think I fit the mold. I mean, definitely, I got the stature for it at 6'6".
Yeah. And
there's a lot of stuff that I can do to get the ball up in the high 90s. I mean, I'm just, like I said before, I'm just really excited that the organization drafted me, and I can't wait to get started.
So now what's the timeline for you? Are they flying you out to Denver? Where do you go from here?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. We're going to have to figure that out. They said they'll let me know soon, so I guess I just stay posted here in Northern Virginia and wait.
You can follow Tommy on Twitter at @OdoyleRules014. Good on you for the Billy Madison reference there in your Twitter handle. Tommy, we'll make sure that we follow you as you make your way to the Rockies organization. Thanks so much for the time. Enjoy watching the rest of the MLB draft, and congratulations again.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the time.
Tommy Doyle, right-hander closer for the University of Virginia, now one of the newest members of the Colorado Rockies. In fact, there are 10 new members at this point of the Colorado Rockies. I didn't really get to discuss it on the show at all today because we've been tight, and with Will coming on at the beginning and Tommy at the end and David Ramsey and everything else. I spoke a little bit with Ryan Vallade, the first-round draft pick. This dude has just redonkulous power. He said last night that he hit 4 to 6 balls.